If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to Microbrew, Milwaukee Brewers Chatter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, and the Milwaukee Brewers are National League Central Division champions for the third year in a row. It happened on Sunday. Needed a Cubs loss. Cubs got swept in four games by the Cincinnati Reds, who are in the playoffs if the season begins or season ends today. And the Brewers needed it. They did not win on Sunday against the Cardinals, so it's backing in a little bit, but they did win four of their six games this week to expedite the process. They have a first round bye coming up. They have pretty much everything they want right now, and yet it's kind of a bittersweet day. I'm joined by Todd Rosiak. He is a Brewers reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Sunday, even though there was a clinch, not a great day for Wisconsin sports fans. It's in the aftermath of a very bad Badgers loss on Saturday. The Packers suffered a very bad loss on Sunday. Brewers didn't win either. And the worst part of it is what came before the game. News that Brandon Woodruff is going on the injured list with a lat strain. Doesn't sound like he's going to pitch at all anymore. Certainly not in the early stages of the postseason. A brutally reminiscent echo of what happened a couple years ago when he gave that emotional press conference, having suffered a serious shoulder injury, unable to pitch right at the end of the regular season. And now here we are again. And granted, There were some red flags. He needed a lot of time between starts. His velocity never quite got back up consistently. He was still a very good pitcher, showed it, was able to gut through outings, had some really great, including an outing this week. And now we're right back where we started. He has not pitched in the postseason since 2021, and it's looking like that's not going to happen in 2025 either. Todd, I'm curious your thoughts on that. I mean, they can do this without him. He wasn't one of their two main starters, I guess. But they're low on starting pitchers. They lose one of their big game guys, even if he doesn't have the same stuff he had a few years ago. And it just feels like a cloud is around this team when it comes to injuries at this time of year. Give me your thoughts on this team losing one of their main guys. Brandon Woodruff is one of their main guys.
So I was not in St. Louis. I missed out on the clinch. So congratulations to Kurt for that. But when I saw the news this morning, just kind of perusing Twitter, my mind was immediately taken back to the press conference in 2023 where they announced what had happened and he was not going to be eligible to pitch. And I was the guy who asked the question that brought him to tears, literally. And obviously that was not my intention. I felt horrible in the aftermath, but it was the emotion spilling out, and understandably so. I mean, you work your whole season, your whole career to get to those points to where you want to pitch, you're going to pitch in the postseason, and then it gets yanked away from you. That was bad enough. But to go through this comeback scenario and have a lot of success, get all the way to this point, and literally like almost the exact same time, a little bit later in the regular season, it was in 23, but to be sidelined by another injury, and like you had said, most likely not going to be available for the postseason. It's got to be a crusher for him. There's no other way to put it. And I give him credit. He put a brave face on today, as he always does, and made himself available. Hat tip just for that alone. I would think many players would be so crushed mentally that they would want to, they would need a day or two to kind of gather their thoughts. But he, stepped right up and spoke about what happened and his feelings and everything. And I guess, just watching the clips of the interview that I did, the thing that jumped out to me was it was almost like a foregone conclusion for him. Like the writing had been on the wall for a while. He was feeling stuff that was not good and trying to battle through it, and just got to the point where enough was enough. And the good news, it sounds like it's not anything shoulder related. I saw Pat Murphy had talked about, sometimes when guys are coming back from long-term injuries like this, you know, you wind up injuring other parts of your body because you're trying to overcompensate or you've overworked them. And I think that, you know, that seems to be the case from my, you know, my couch MD that I hold here. So, you know, all that said, you know, that could have been the last game that Brandon Woodruff pitched in a Brewer uniform. The last time he pitched, refresh my memory, was it against the Angels? These days are running together.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. So let's hope not. You know, I mean, objective reporter here. I'm not certainly rooting for any, you know, outcomes or anything like that. But you root for guys to do well and to have success, and especially good guys. And Brandon Woodruff is one of the good guys. Definition of the word, definition of professional. I get asked a lot, you know, in all the years I've been doing this, you know, who's your favorite people that you've worked with, favorite athletes, you know, who are the best guys? All the time, Brandon Woodruff, top three for me. Just class individual from start to finish. And he's got a mutual option in his contract for 2026. Typically, those things do not get picked up on one side or the other. So let's see. Let's see what happens. We all know that there's a huge affinity on both sides, Woodruff for the Brewers and vice versa. He's a fan favorite, dare I say, budding legend in Milwaukee and with Brewers fans. You know, maybe there's a way that the two sides can figure out something for another year to come back together. And, you know, maybe then Brandon Woodruff can have a fully healthy and productive 2026 in a Brewer uniform. If not, you know, you understand that's the business and, you know, you got to move on, but just a crusher in many ways, both for player and team in this scenario.
Well, I'm wondering what you'd predict there. Certainly it makes sense, him coming back. We already saw him come back with the way the injury was, and he had this comfort with the Brewers organization. He was willing to be part of a 2-year deal. The Brewers, you know, were willing to make that happen as well. That even put him in play for this season. Realistically, they could have lost him two seasons ago. And it certainly would make sense that he would be looking for a make good, get right year, and he would be back. But I guess it's the Brewers have been bitten a little bit by this situation where they take a player coming off of an injury and it hasn't worked out. You think of Shelby Miller this year when they traded for him with some injury history and a current injury at that moment. Rhys Hoskins, the 2-year deal they signed him to, you know, he's had some moments, but I'm sure they wouldn't do that deal again, knowing the production that they ultimately got. I don't know if the Brewers are so snake bitten by that they would keep going down that route, keep trying to find sort of, you know, value in guys who are coming off of injuries. But this is Brandon Woodruff. This is also not just some guy off the street. This is a guy who's been here forever. So what do you predict happens with him next?
I mean, it's hard to predict because it is a business. If I had to call it, I would say that both sides are going to work really hard to try to make a reunion happen. And I think the Brewers have shown, Mark Adonazio has shown that the Brewers, the franchise, really values Brandon Woodruff. If not, they would not have given him that incredibly generous deal that they did coming off that shoulder surgery, where essentially, you know, he got paid, I think, $5 million last year to rehab. And, you know, this year, I think he made another five or something like that. Forgive me if the numbers are a little off, but, you know, basically he's going to get a gigantic buyout now to kind of make up for that. And, you know, I don't think from the player's side either, from Brandon Woodruff's side, that, you know, he probably feels, again, I may be speaking out of turn here, but he probably feels a loyalty to the Brewers, and he probably feels like, hey, you know, I feel like I got to give them more, you know, like they stood by me. Now maybe I need to give them an opportunity. I could be totally wrong there because we all know that players need to do what's best for them. Franchises need to do what's best for them. But it just makes too much sense to me on both sides for another reunion. And what a run back it could be if, assuming the Brewers do hold on to Freddie Peralta in the offseason, you bring back Freddie, you bring back hopefully a healthy Brandon Woodruff. You know, maybe the Miz sorts out his command issues, and all of a sudden you've got a really good threesome to start to build off of. And then with some of the young arms like Robert Gasser, you know, Logan Henderson and so forth, and who knows what moves are going to be made in the offseason as well. So selfishly, personally, I certainly hope that reunion happens. I think it's definitely a possibility, but a lot has to kind of shake out between now and then.
Yeah, I believe that that mutual option is like $20 million for 2026. I mean, that's not going to happen. Yeah. So yeah, it would be a restructure of some sort, I'm sure. Right. As we look at this playoff roster now, like I said, they're down to two quality starting pitchers that they can rely on in Freddy Peralta and Quinn Priester. They obviously have other options. Jose Quintana, who's injured, Logan Henderson, who's injured, Chad Patrick, who's been working a little bit. There's Jacob Mazurowski that we're going to talk about in a minute. That might be enough, you know, like especially for the division series where it's a best of five and you really truly only need three starters. But I've seen teams like the 2021 Brewers who were loaded for bear with starting pitching and they didn't make it out of the first round. And so it didn't matter that they had a lot of starters. I'm sure there are other teams that have pieced it together, bullpen games, you know, getting short starts out of guys. In general, starting pitcher workload over time has gone down in the playoffs. If you see a guy into the sixth inning, that's super rare. In fact, I think that's what Jose Quintana did for the Mets against the Brewers last year. And that was kind of stunning. So I guess in theory, this is something they can overcome. I'm curious on your thoughts more about starting pitching in general. Like, can they, how big of a ding is this? Because they probably can piece it together in terms of workload. They're just missing a guy who can be a difference maker. So I don't know. I don't know how you feel about the Brewers playoff chances taking a hit with the news on Brandon Woodruff.
Everyone, that's Ernie, by the way. I think he's made an appearance before. So my apologies. That's what you see in the background.
Ernie the Cat on the video feed here.
Yes, he wants to weigh in on what he thinks the Brewers are going to do pitching-wise. But obviously it's not an ideal scenario. But if there's any team that I think has proven over the years that a team that can roll with the punches, that can get creative, especially when it comes to pitching, it is the Brewers. And, you know, as long as you've got, I think, Freddie and Quinn Priester in place pitching well, which they both are, that's huge. That helps get you through the first series. And then from there, I think you do need to get a little bit creative. You know, Jose Quintana, I think, factors into this still. He's eligible to come off the IL on September 30th. We'll see where he kind of falls. You know, DL Hall is a guy that could pitch some bulk, but he's got some hurdles to get over before he can, the Brewers can count on him. Logan Henderson is another name that I think you have to at least consider because he becomes eligible to come off the IL in early October. You know, Gasser made his season debut today.
Right.
You mentioned Chad Patrick. There's a bunch of names and there's a bunch of guys. So there are options. The biggest thing to me, obviously, in losing Brandon Woodruff is just the experience factor. You know, and I asked Murph about that last week. And he's never one to look ahead. He wasn't really crazy about the question, but you do have to acknowledge the fact that, you know, Freddie Peralta, Brandon Woodruff, those guys having really deep playoff resumes. Now, success-wise, maybe not so much, but they have pitched under the bright lights and performed okay. So, to me, that's kind of the biggest loss. And if Brandon Woodruff was trending downward, which he was in terms of velocity and just over his last, you know, six or seven starts, the body of work was not nearly as strong as it was early on. You know, maybe this winds up being for the best because, you know, the possibility could have been that he went out there and got crushed too. So, again, a lot of time in between now and when they actually have to set a roster, you know, they've worked through all the scenarios. They'll continue to work through all the scenarios. I think this last week of the regular season here is going to be interesting to kind of see what pieces they utilize, what, you know, who goes where, that sort of thing. Between now and when they actually do take the field for game one of their series, obviously a lot is going to happen. A lot's going to be determined and probably a few surprises along the way.
I think it's been a little weird with Robert Gasser that they have waited so long to bring him back. Like you said, he worked on Sunday, his first appearance since needing Tommy John surgery. So from I believe that's last June that he pitched, maybe late May, had pitched five times and won every game. So this is the first start he has not won in the big leagues, but that the Brewers rather have not won with him on the mound in the big leagues. He worked a more abbreviated workload, and the Brewers said they were trying to push him back into a relief role because it seemed like there weren't going to be openings in this rotation, and now it feels like there are plenty of openings in the rotation, particularly with, you know, Quintana, the left-hander, going out with this calf issue that like you said, he might be back in plenty of time for the playoffs, but I'm curious to know where Robert Gasser fits for sure.
Well, just on the Gasser thing, because I have gotten a lot of questions about this, and I tried to address it in the mailbag the other day. But the Brewers have been very upfront about the way they had handled Robert Gasser, and everybody's had their hands up, and they're like, why haven't they brought him back? Why haven't they brought him back? It's a very structured, very preset rehab schedule and schedule pitching-wise that pitchers are coming back from Tommy John surgery have to be on. Relievers are different from starters. Robert Gasser's been on a very specific program as a starter, and the Brewers did not want to disrupt that. All of a sudden, it's not fair to the kid. You know, he's coming back from a major surgery. He's been doing things, certain amount of pitches, a certain number of days, certain number of days of rest, etc. To all of a sudden upset the apple cart and expect him to come in and pitch out of the bullpen when he hadn't done that is not fair to the player. So if you look at his game logs, the start of September, that's when they shifted him to relief. They started shortening his appearances up, fewer less days in between, and getting him ready for that bullpen scenario. And like you mentioned, now all of a sudden maybe he'll be considered to start. So it's all been about player health and what the Brewers feel is best for Robert Gasser and for his elbow and for his future, because this is a guy that they're going to be counting on moving forward, not, you know, just the rest of this season, but next year and beyond, most likely.
Part of why this is such an urgent and tough conversation is that Jacob Mizorowski has not been reliable as a starting pitcher, and he had another rough outing this week against the Cardinals, and pretty clearly, you know, they didn't outright say what their plan is for him, but you know, it doesn't take a lot of reading between the lines to realize Pat Murphy, in his comments, they're not going to work with him as a starter in the postseason unless they absolutely have to. Right now, they're looking, I would have to think, at him in a relief role, if any role at all. Like, he's just been erratic, and he's gotten hit around hard in his more recent starts, which is unusual. That has not, even when he has been erratic in the minor leagues, it's not like he gives up a ton of contact or a ton of hits. And now you're kind of seeing all of that. I wonder what you think about him. He's obviously a guy who can be an X factor, and if he were the Jacob Mizorowski of, you know, of June and July, you would still not even think twice, of course, about putting him on the big on the postseason roster. But we know his workload is well beyond anything that it's been before. He's just really erratic, and I would think that they have to think long and hard about even using him at all as a relief pitcher. But he's still so special. So what do you foresee? What's next for Jacob Mizorowski?
Just based off of what Murph had to say in the last several days, it certainly doesn't look like he's going to be considered for a spot in the rotation. That being said, I think his arm talent is just too good, and what he brings to the table is just too good, even with the variables, to not consider him in a bullpen role. So then it becomes, well, what makes the most sense for the player in a playoff scenario? And maybe that becomes something where, you know, you kind of piggyback him with somebody. You start Robert Gasser, let's say, for a couple innings, or you know, Chad Patrick or whatever, and then you move to Jacob Mizorowski for a few innings. If he can give you two or three innings out of the bullpen, throw in that gas, he can wind up being a real weapon. I actually had a pretty good chat with a scout who's been following the Brewers recently, and he brought up that exact scenario and saying that, you know, if Mizorowski is dialed in, and that's the big key, if he's dialed in that role, coming out of the bullpen, being able to throw two or three innings could be a gigantic weapon and a gigantic X factor for the Brewers. So again, I think they'll continue to talk through these scenarios. To me, nobody better than Chris Hook and Jim Henderson to kind of sort these things out, and knowing the player and knowing, you know, what the guys can give them. I would put complete trust in those guys and their judgment calls, and you know, whatever role Jacob Mizorowski winds up landing in, I'm sure it's going to be one the Brewers are confident that he's going to succeed in. And if Jacob Mizorowski can step up and deliver in those situations, and he has stepped up in big situations, he's pitched with the spotlight on him this year before in those big matchups against Kershaw, Skeens, and so forth. You know, he could wind up being one of the real stories for the Brewers, again, if he's able to dial in that command.
He's not the only. These are not the only pitching questions they have. Trevor McGill did not is not apparently going to be available here before the end of the regular season. I guess there's still some jury out on that, but that hasn't, I guess, gone as they had hoped it would go. Not as the best case scenario. So it's unclear if the Brewers will even have their closer for the postseason. I think that's probably something they can absorb, but man, it sure would look a lot more settled if they had him available. You know, I already mentioned Quintana. William Contreras left Saturday night's game with what looked like kind of a bad injury, and he didn't play Sunday, but he was lobbying to play. Of course he was. He's a guy who hates being out of the lineup at all costs. So it sounds like he's at least healthy enough to pull that off, but we've seen him struggle a lot this year, particularly early in the season when it seemed like he had a finger or hand injury. And now he maybe has another one. So that, I guess, is a concern for a production standpoint, if not necessarily an availability one. But McGill, I guess I want to know what you think there, because, again, with Abner as your closer, like they've got guys who can handle it. It's just one more big-time hammer, one more 100-mile-an-hour fastball that you don't have available to you if he cannot go. I'm going to guess they're going to give it a shot. But what rolls around in your head when you think maybe this team won't have McGill either for the postseason?
Yeah, looking at the proposed tentative schedule moving forward the rest of this week, it looks like best case scenario they would like to have him at least throw an inning or so in the season finale, which would be a week from today that we're recording this Sunday against the Reds. But again, he has hurdles he needs to get over, and they've been moving very slowly because he has still been feeling some pain in there, hasn't been feeling right. The times that we've talked to him or tried to talk to him, he's been kind of coy and not really offering a lot, and I'm sure it has something to do with the fact that he doesn't really know himself where he stands. So I think the next several days are going to be very big in terms of how they feel they can kind of push him, if so. But like you said, there's no question that he would be a gigantic weapon to have coming out of the bullpen. Let's say 3 weeks ago, projecting into the postseason, you had a back end of McGill, Uribe, Shelby Miller, three guys who have closing experience and really good stuff. And then you had guys like Aaron Ashby, Nick Mears. That was shaping up to be a really nice bullpen. Now, not so much. So if you can get McGill back, I'm sure he'll do everything he can to try to get back and contribute, because that he feels like he hasn't come this far and had the all-star year that he's had to not get a chance in the regular season here. But again, you got to be smart with the player. You don't want to cause damage that's unnecessary. So this is a story that we'll kind of be following pretty closely here over the next several days. I'll be in San Diego. They got an off day on Thursday, and then they close out the season at home against the Reds. So a lot to be determined between now and then.
The only thing in the standings that has to be determined is whether or not this team is the first overall seed or the second. They are getting that first round bye. They've won the division. They've secured all the prizes available to them except home field advantage in a potential NLCS situation against the Phillies, quite honestly. And the way these things have gone the last 3 years under the current format, it's highly unlikely, actually, that the top two seeds will even make it to the NLCS. But I want to get your thoughts on this, because I keep rolling it around in my head. The magic number to bypass the Phillies is 3. It's almost certainly going to happen that the Brewers will be the number one seed. It's highly unlikely that they will be anything less. But if they keep that number one seed, they are going to face the winner right now. Almost definitely the Cubs will be one of those teams for sure. The Padres will probably be the other one. But the Cubs will be in that mix. They will be on track to face Craig Counsell and their big-time rival for the first time in a postseason series in the National League Division Series, of course, if the Cubs win that wild card series. And I just wonder if that's really what the Brewers want. And of course, they don't care. And you can't pick your opponent. They could face the Red Hot Cincinnati Reds, the worst team in the field, and wind up losing that series. Like that's all on the table. We've seen it with the Mets and the Diamondbacks. They got some hot teams and they lost. But I guess if you're a Brewers fan, you look at it and think, man, I don't want them to face the Cubs, because I don't want to go to a stadium full of Cubs fans in the playoffs. I don't want to risk the possibility that they play a team that is very good defensively, has been a bad matchup, and could, take away your home field. And how brutal would it be to lose to the Cubs? On the other hand, how great would it be to beat the Cubs? So, like, I think I know what you're going to say. I think you're going to say that it's silly to even think about this at all. You win as many games as you can. You let the opponents fall where they may. I still think, part of me strongly still thinks it would be better if they were the number two seed. They let the Phillies roll on past, because you don't want to have to face the Cubs unless you absolutely have to. Tell me I'm a lunatic, Todd. I know you're going to, but go ahead. Give it to me.
Well, I mean, you are a lunatic. We all know that. That goes without saying anyway. I see the rationale in what you're saying. It makes sense, but you're also right. You kind of answered your own question that, yes, they're going to continue to try to win as many games as possible. There's a strong likelihood anyway that, the Phillies may take care of business on their own, even without the Brewers taking their foot off the pedal, because I'm looking at their schedule right now. They finished with 6 at home, 3 against the Marlins, 3 against the Twins. So, they're going to be pushing hard to try to finish out the season strong. And then they get Trey Turner back. They're expecting early in the playoffs, it sounds like. So they've been playing crazy good even without him. So, they're going to be a dangerous team and a tough out in the postseason. I go back and forth. Like, the Cubs, to me, yeah, I mean, they hold the tie. They've held a tiebreaker of the Brewers. They won the season series. They've been, it's been a pretty much an evenly matched series, I would say, overall over the course of the season. Some good games, some bad games. You've got the fan factor, like you talked about, the proximity, the rivalry. There's so much that goes into it. But to me, more than anything, it's just two teams that know each other so well. That should make for some really good games strategically. You move to the upper bracket. Let's say the Reds hang on and wind up getting that spot, staying ahead of the Mets and getting that final spot. I believe that becomes the Reds and the Dodgers, correct?
Correct.
Up in the upper. So to me, you mentioned it too, these hot teams that get in that you never expect, to me, those are the most dangerous teams. The Reds get in, they would scare the crap out of me, quite honestly, because they've just been playing for their lives. Every year it seems like a team gets in and just does major damage, and it wouldn't surprise me in the least to see them knock off the Dodgers if they make it in. So, I don't know. I go back and forth. You know me, I've made no bones about it. There's me and I in media. I'm going for ease of travel. I would root for a Cubs series just for the fact that I can drive down there and drive home and not have to get on any flights. I think Padres would be an interesting and a fun matchup, but not necessarily looking forward to getting back on a plane in another 2 weeks and going back out there, or 10 days or whatever it would be. So I don't even know if I've answered your question. I've kind of rambled, but it's just interesting to kind of talk through all the permutations and the possibilities and, see what might potentially end up. But one way or the other, the Brewers are going to have to beat some really good teams to get that albatross off of their neck and actually win a series and get to, the NLCS and potentially beyond.
Yeah, I think that's well said and correct. And, if they beat the Cubs, it's awesome. And also, like, I'm sure someone is screaming into their Bluetooth headset right now and be like, you really want to face the Dodgers? Like, it doesn't matter that they went 6-0 against them in the regular season. They're playing well. They're pitching out of their minds. You don't want to face that team either. So I think it's just it's been such a fully formed National League picture for so long. It's really easy to talk yourself into any of the big five teams, including the Padres, as a team that can win the National League. This sixth team might be a fly in the ointment for somebody, for sure. Like the Reds or the Diamondbacks are still involved. The Mets have been in free fall, but you saw what they could do. They did last year when they got in the playoffs. So the Dodgers, I don't think anybody should be thinking of the Dodgers as like the lesser of two evils. They're still the Dodgers, and they're definitely a big problem. So yes. Real quick, wanted to get your thoughts on what roster questions you have about the NL, the playoff roster, that first playoff roster. If there's, anything you think is going to be revealed here in the last week, like still a position battle that might be up for grabs. I'm looking at the Rhys Hoskins situation, seeing that he's, he was in the lineup on Sunday. He got 3 at bats, which gives him 7 at bats since he returned from his injury in early September, September 6th, I think. So 2.5 weeks, 7 at bats. I mean, the Brewers are telling us straight up that he is just a pinch hitter and is kind of out of the equation at this point. And I no longer think he's going to be on that roster. I think it's going to just be Andrew Vaughn and Jake Bowers, who is, of course, one of the team's hottest hitters at the moment. So it seems like they've sort of told us what they're going to do there. I find that to be an interesting sort of unceremonious end to the Hoskins era, if that's in fact what we're up against. But if not that, what else are you thinking about looking at? Like, I mean, the bullpen's got some questions. As we get closer to that division roster, that decision process, what are you thinking?
Yeah, I think the Rhys Hoskins thing is kind of a no-brainer at this point. And like you said, the team has already showed its cards. And it's unfortunate because, you know, through no fault of his own, he had his season essentially ended by just a fluke play thanks to a bad throw over to first base in Miami. And there's no telling what, you know, may have happened. He wasn't tearing the cover off the ball back then, but this is a guy that's a veteran. He's been through the battles in the postseason. You know, maybe he would have stepped up and had another big moment in October or two for the Brewers. We probably will never know that. You know, the rest of the position player group, I think, is, you know, seems pretty well set. The Bowers Vaughn thing, I think you just continue to roll with at first base. And as you noted, Jake Bowers has been very hot at the plate. Andrew Vaughn has actually hit very well, but has not hit a home run since that series in Cincinnati way back in August, which is crazy to think. I was kind of crunching some other numbers earlier today, and another guy who's really kind of fallen in terms of pecking order and playing in time and so forth is Isaac Collins. And again, through no fault of his own, it's out, like ever since he was on the paternity list, his offensive numbers have just tanked. And that combined with the defensive, I don't want to call them struggles, but, you know, maybe miscommunications with Jackson Churio in center, bad reads, that's kind of conspired to take some playing time away from him as well. So, you know, those are a couple names to kind of throw out there and kind of mull over. But, yeah, the bullpen, there's certainly going to be a lot of moving pieces there. You know, you look at what's staring you in the face right now, you know, working from the back end, obviously Abner Uribe, Aaron Ashby, Nick Mears, Jared Koenig, those guys are all no-brainers. Beyond that, I don't know, Grant Anderson, you know, he's pitched well in spurts, pitched well all year, but, you know, pitched well, very well in spurts. And then you're looking at guys like Eric Fetty, I don't know, Tobias Myers. Rob Strizny, I don't know. That's when you start thinking like, oh, hey, when is DL Hall ready? You know, can he make it back? You know, so maybe Quintana can pitch out of the bullpen in that first series. There's a lot of different, again, a lot of different names, a lot of moving pieces. But again, the Brewers are very creative and very open-minded when it comes to these sorts of things. And I have no doubt that they'll come up with the guys that they feel are right, the guys that they feel can deliver, and the guys that they feel are going to be the best matchups for certain parts of the game, you know, especially late.
One of the names we always say on this podcast is Craig Yoho. I really feel like he's still someone who could. I mean, the Brewers, I have to think, are not going considering him, because otherwise he would be here instead of Bruce Zimmerman, who a guy who pitched to AAA all season long. They brought him up. They cut ties with Yoel Piamps. I mean, that created an opening on the 40-man roster, but man, that surprised me. I really thought Craig Yoho at some point was going to get one more shot, and that is a fleeting feeling. I don't know if that's going to happen. So, yeah, there's a lot of guys. There's a lot of guys. Jefferson Caro is still maybe kind of. I mean, he's on the taxi squad and with the team right now. He had a tremendous season at AAA. I don't think they're going to activate him, put him on the 40-man. That's an off-season. He's already on the 40-man. I don't think they're going to put him on the 26-man. But also, you know, Danny Jansen has struggled in his backup role. And could they maybe at the last second? Probably not. Almost certainly not make that sort of that last second switch. But I don't know. It beats me. You know, before we get to three up, three down, you know, we got to just mention this team is on the cusp of winning its 96th game at some point this week. That will be a franchise record. If they win two of their final six games, they will have set a franchise record for wins. 97 would be a franchise record for wins. They're probably not going to get to 100, but they could if they win 5 of 6. They've done it. I don't know how that's possible. I just don't know. I can't believe it as I watched it unfold. I certainly can't believe it if you asked me before the season where I thought this team would be. I think you could have talked me into the Brewers are just a team that competes and you know they're going to be in the playoff hunt because they do it every year, no matter the roster. You could have talked me into that. 95 wins, 96, 97. Are you kidding me? How do you explain this? Just, I know there's millions of different things, but at some point you have to be able to answer, what do the Brewers do that other franchises simply don't do? The teams like the Mets with this massive payroll, teams like, you know, the Rays even, who are very similar to the Brewers, they don't sustain this. They don't go to the playoffs 7 years in a row like this, or, you know, that's not quite right, but close. What do you say? How are they doing this?
What are you trying to do? Set up my story that's coming out next Sunday, talking about this exact topic, this exact
who is to set
answering what everybody wants to know, how the Brewers keep doing this.
JSonline.com/deal. That's where you want to go for that. Yeah, just who's to say?
There will be a long form explanatory story talking about this exact thing. So I don't want to steal all the thunder. Let's just focus in on this year in particular. I think if you held feet to the fire, you had everybody take a lie detector test in the front office, going all the way up to Mark Adonazio. I don't think anybody could honestly say, oh, yeah, hey, we expected to set a new franchise record for wins, looking at the roster coming out of spring training, certainly with all the injuries. And then as guys kept falling during the early part of the season, no way in hell could anybody have expected it. I go back to that. I keep saying it. I keep going back to that moment in the eighth inning in Pittsburgh on May 28th. When Caleb Durbin, Bryce Terang, those back-to-back doubles, both 0-2 in the count, they steal that win from the Pirates. They split the four-game series. They go home. They sweep the Red Sox. They go on the road. They sweep the Phillies. All of a sudden, they're off to the races, and it was like they just caught fire. Everybody started believing in each other. I'm not saying they didn't before, but there was like, to me, it was like solidified at that moment, crystallized. And they were off and running. And then guys started getting healthy, started coming back. You're getting production out of guys that you never would have guessed, like the Isaac Collins of the world, the Caleb Durbins of the world, Bryce Terang having a career year, Christian Yelich having a comeback year, Freddy Peralta pitching like a borderline Cy Young guy, Quinn Priester coming out of absolutely nowhere, Trevor McGill having an all-star season. Like, the stars aligned. Everything came together. They rattle off 8 wins in a row. Then they rattle off 11 wins in a row, then 14 in a row. And it was just like, to me, it was the proverbial snowball going downhill, gaining momentum. And before long, they had just created such a large lead and were like way ahead of the pack and everything. Things obviously normalized, equalized. They came back to earth quite a bit. But here we are entering the last week of the regular season, still in very good position to clinch that number one seed with the best record. It's been an incredible story. There's no way around it. Pat Murphy said it the other day. On paper, there was no chance of this happening. Nobody had any expectations. And he's right. So to me, I would urge fans to remember all this as the postseason approaches and, you know, what could be inevitable heartbreak. Unless you win it all, you're going to wind up, you know, if you lose in the World Series, whatever, there's very, very likely going to be more heartbreak along the way. But I think you got to stop and smell the roses and really appreciate what this team has done, not only this year, but last year, the year before that, 3 straight Central titles, 4 out of 5, playoffs 7 out of 8 years. It's been an incredible, incredible run. And the franchise does not get enough credit for what it does. I feel like it gets more flack than anything for lack of spending money and, you know, Mark's cheap and yada, yada, yada. You can make those arguments, but the numbers don't lie. They've been one of the best teams in baseball for going on a decade now, almost. And that should be appreciated and recognized. But like I said before, we'll see if they can remove this albatross from around their neck, win in the NLDS, and then, you know, see what happens in the NLCS and beyond. Maybe this is the year. Maybe this is the year they do it. Maybe this is the year at the very least they get to the World Series. And then we'll see what happens. But however you slice it, whatever happens moving forward, it's been an incredible ride. And they deserve credit for that.
Brewers.com/postseason. If you're looking for tickets, those single game tickets go on sale Tuesday. I have to think Brewers ticket officials were pretty relieved that there wouldn't be any confusion about whether or not they have clinched a spot in that DS in the division series, because, you know, they're selling first round tickets. Well, up until clinching on Sunday, first round could have been anything. It could have been a wild card series, different dates from the division series. So now we know where the Brewers are headed. They know where they're hosting games. It's October 4th, October 6th. Those are their first two playoff games at home at American Family Field. They go on the road for 3-4 if it's necessary, and then back 5 October 11th, I believe, is that date. Do I have that right? I think I do. That's correct. And so lots of off days in there. It's going to be a fun one. All right, let's go into some of the more granular details from the week. Here it is, the week that was, our weekly segment. It is 3 Up, 3 Down. One last bit of housekeeping I want to mention. I've got an interview with Jackson Churio coming up at the end of this. I wanted a big-time interview guest for a big-time episode, the clinching episode. So chatted with him a little about his his growing up in Venezuela and in baseball, you know, where that came into the picture, and just sort of his development into the player that he is right now, which is still 21 years old. He got to celebrate in the clinching ceremony and could legally drink the alcohol that was flowing in the clubhouse at St. Louis. So that is a change from last year. Of course, they famously gave him a stroller full of non-alcoholic brew last year. I thought that was very, very funny. But another clinch celebration for him. I'm going to start. My number one, Todd, is, and you kind of mentioned Quinn Priester, but what a performance this week on Thursday against the Angels. He struck out the first 6 batters he faced. He then struck out 8 of the first 9 batters that he faced. He finished with 10 strikeouts. He didn't get the win. It ultimately kind of goes down, I guess you could argue, as a little bit of a bummer. He didn't get through 6 innings. Because the Angels were able to cobble some stuff together. They took the lead. Brewers offense wasn't doing anything early, but then they came back to win the game. The Brewers sweep the Angels, and Quinn Priester, for the 19th consecutive volume start from Quinn Priester, the Brewers won the game. I think it's 16 consecutive starts, and then 19 when you consider that he had an opener for a couple of those. That's insane. They haven't lost a Quinn Priester start since May. And even the one they lost, it was a 2-1 game against Pittsburgh. Like, they could have easily won that game too. Absolutely wild stuff. The absolute curveball of bringing him in and having him be one of the most productive players on this roster this year. What a wild turn of events. So Quinn Priester absolutely shoving in his Thursday start. You'll get one more from him, and dude's your game 2 guy. He's your game 2 and maybe your game 5 starter, depending on how things shape up in the NLDS. He's going to have a big spotlight on him when they get to the postseason.
Yeah, and then in that same game, Chris Taylor got his comeuppance, yes, if you want to call it that, at American, yes, Family Field. Everybody remembers what he did to the Brewers in the NLCS back in 2018 with the Dodgers. Well, he was playing center field for the Angels and sent a drive. There were a couple of guys on base, hit a drive to left center, not quite to the spot that he made his diving catch against Christian Yelich in that NLCS game. But kind of similar. And Blake Perkins, playing center field, comes out of nowhere and makes a terrific sliding catch on the warning track, just shy of the wall, to reel it in. And Taylor was heartbroken, and Aaron Ashby was happy, and Brewers fans were happy. And then I want to say not long after that was when was it Yelich that hit the double over Taylor?
Churio. I think it was Churio.
Yes, yes. So kind of a 2-4 for Chris Taylor, and he leaves Milwaukee with his tail between his legs, and the Brewers sweep the Angels. So just kind of anybody who's followed the team, you know, going back to 2018, that name will stick with you forever, Chris Taylor. So it's just kind of funny to see him, get his just desserts in Milwaukee.
David Fries, Chris Taylor, a couple names that Brewers fans know well from playoff heartbreak. And yeah, the exorcism. You love to see a good exorcism. Well, you want to get all those bad vibes out of your system before the playoffs begin, and that's exactly what that was. Like you said, Blake Perkins obviously continues to be solid defensively. He's been good offensively. He's really picked it up at a time when they could use it, obviously, here toward the end of the season, and they're trying to make these roster decisions. Obviously, Perkins is in the mix. He's probably on the roster. I would assume he's on the roster, so... really an amazing, amazing defensive play.
Yeah, I will. I'm going to jump in front of you. I'll do my second one now, as long as we're on this topic, because I wanted to bring up Perkins again.
Okay.
We talk about people and we talk about personalities, and Blake Perkins is not a star on this Brewers team. You know, he was a finalist for a Rawlings Gold Glove Award last year. Terrific defender. But what a story the guy's been over the last 3 years that he's been in the Brewers organization. And I think he deserves a tip of the cap for the way he's kind of comported himself. I don't know all the details. We do know that he went on the bereavement list a while back. That usually portends losing a family member of some sort, somebody close to you. And anybody who's gone through that knows that that's very painful. But then to have to come back and to compete at such a high level like a major league player does, he is as well-spoken, thoughtful, soft-spoken, humble, professional athlete as you're ever going to meet. And, you know, his numbers were not the greatest once he did come back, but he's found his stride now. He's hitting the ball better. He's always going to play terrific defense. So I just wanted to kind of shout him out and, you know, give him his flowers a little bit, just because it's the job is incredibly hard when things are going perfect in your personal life. And to be dealing with any sort of loss in your personal life and having to work beyond that and kind of put that to the side and perform at the highest level is not easy at all. So kudos to Blake Perkins, just a terrific guy, and good for him for doing what he's been doing here of late, because he definitely deserves the notoriety for that.
I kind of put him in the same boat a little bit as Andrew Monasterio, a guy who's been around a while, who, you know, provides you some stuff. He's not a star. He's not going to be a guy that other teams are going to want to add, but he's somebody that's been so essential. And so that brings me to my number two, this play on Saturday night that Andrew Monasterio was in the middle of. It's the extra innings. The Brewers were they had two outs in their half of the 10th against the Cardinals with a runner at third base. So it looked like there was a chance. Bryce Turan got down in the count, and he ends up singling to bring in that extra run. And then, of course, the Cardinals start with a runner at second in their half of the 10th. And Jared Koenig makes this play where he looks the runner back to second on a comebacker. I assumed he was going to run at the runner and take the lead runner. That would have been a huge success. I think he probably bailed on that idea a little too quickly and threw to first to get the runner there. But then runner breaks for third. So he gets the out, throws a little low, but Monasterio saves it, gets the out at first. Monasterio, of course, not a first baseman, but playing first base here at this point in the game after all these substitutions. And then he throws across the diamond, nabs the runner, a very unusual double play that obviously puts the Brewers in phenomenal position to win that game. They record the final out. They win a narrow one against the Cardinals 3-2. Big night. That was the night where the Cubs also, you know, the Cubs got swept this weekend. So it was two numbers off the magic number. They went from three down to one, set the stage for Sunday. Kind of an unusual defensive play. I don't know if I think Koenig handled it perfectly, but how he handled it ended up saving the day, getting that runner to just hedge a little bit. And then he was out in third when Monasterio threw across the diamond, threw flat footed, was able to make a great throw. Wild moment. Definitely a scream out loud moment. I was celebrating my anniversary on Saturday. We were out at downtown Milwaukee, and I promised I wouldn't be paying. Well, I promised myself. I didn't tell my wife that I wouldn't be following the game, but for the most part, I stayed away from the game. But then we went out for drinks, and it was right on the TV. So yes, it was a scream out loud, like "Holy smokes!" moment, and had you know, saw a little of it. You can't get away from the game if you are out in downtown Milwaukee. So that was a very fun play. One of the more memorable defensive plays of the year, I would say. Absolutely set them up to win that game.
Yeah, the throw was incredible. Like you said, flat-footed, strong and accurate, right on the bag. Newt Barr was clearly out. You know, not to pat myself on the back at all, but was very reminiscent of the throw that I made to you home, from first to home in the media front office softball game a couple weeks ago that we got hosed on. Right?
We talked about that. Yes, it was a beautiful throw from Todd Rosiak. I think we did say that we said that the worst part about getting jobbed at the front office media softball game on that particular play was that it was such a good throw. And we definitely put that together. We made the tag, ruled safe because we didn't have an umpire and some people just weren't willing to be honest. That's fine. I'm not bitter about it. I'm not thinking about it at all anymore. Probably. So anyway, it was a great throw. It deserved to be rewarded.
Finally, my mosquito bites are healing after whatever it's been almost 3 weeks. That was pretty brutal. But
if you go outside for 5 minutes anywhere in Milwaukee, you are getting a mosquito bite right now this year.
Yeah, brutal. But I'll round it out here. Number three for me, a bullet dodge, let's say, on Sunday, Caleb Durbin getting hit in the head by a pitch. Pretty scary moment. And to see him get hit by a pitch, not necessarily surprising, but I believe that's the first time he's been hit in the head this year. And that C-flap go flying off, the helmet go flying off. You know, he threw the bat kind of in frustration. I think I'm sure he was a little bit scared at that moment. But thankfully for him and for the Brewers, no worse for wear, stays in the game, and then goes on and gets clipped in the hand. And I don't know, I think it was his next at bat or next plate appearance, if not the one after that. But now 22 times been hit by pitches. I believe that's third in the major league, second in the NL. Behind Wilson Contreras. It's a skill that that Caleb Durbin says he doesn't go up there trying to be hit by pitches, but he also does not try to get out of the way of pitches either. So I think balls at your head you would definitely try to get out of the way of, but anything else, he's fairly comfortable getting hit, as he's proven, and he's moving up the career annals in Brewers franchise history. I think he's now third behind Ricky Weeks and Fernando Vina, if I remember correctly. So hats off to Mr. Caleb Durbin, who's also having a great rookie season. And I think some people would argue has probably surpassed Isaac Collins in the rookie of the year race that Cade Horton, it sounds like, from the odds makers, at least anyway, for the Cubs, is kind of running away with at this point. We'll see. But it's just interesting and fun to kind of see a couple of Brewers who never in a million years going into the season would have you would expected either one of those guys to be in the running, and they very well could wind up being second and third when it all comes down to it.
Durbin hit by a pitch again on Sunday. He has hits in 9 of his last 11 games, and that included taking an 0-for on Sunday. So it was 9 of 10 multi-hit games in 5 of those outings. He is just really, really seeing the ball, killing the ball. It has been a huge boon to the Brewers. And defensively, he's making plays left and right. You know, we did see that. We already have commented on it a bunch. But the fact that he went from a guy who did not look like a third baseman early in his really even in spring training, or especially in spring training, he has just gotten so much better and has become a very reliable third baseman. Even with a guy who maybe doesn't have a cannon for an arm, he is getting it done big, big time. And obviously, that's been a huge, huge boost for the Brewers. My last one, number 3, is a little about Brewers broadcast. They have gotten these camera angles in the corners, the like left and right field corner of American Family Field, and I love this camera angle. You are seeing some really cool stuff up close. Jackson Chourio leaped into the wall into the left field corner to make a catch, and we had a really, really good view of that. I don't know whose idea it was to come up with those. I've not seen that before, but they've had an inordinate amount of action since they implemented those cameras. I especially like it because if you know, most fans have a hard time seeing both corners at the same time down the right, even from the press box. You don't see the right field corner. You have no idea if a ball is fair. So I love having that that angle down there where you can really see some of the action. So cool. Kudos to the FanDuel folks for whoever came up with that idea. Love it, love it, love it, love it. What didn't we talk about on 3 up, 3 down? You know, I was going to mention Brandon Woodruff getting 9 strikeouts using primarily 89-mile-an-hour pitches early in the week. Now, unfortunately, we found out why. Maybe that velocity was so down in that start. And still, the man was able to pitch his way to 9 strikeouts. He's just such a professional, such a gamer. And that, you know, unfortunately might be his last outing in a Brewers uniform. It's hard to say. Sal Frelick hit a home run on Wednesday and then flew around the bases. I'm not sure he knew it was gone when he hit it. And he just was streaking around the bases. It's always fun to see that. The antithesis to the William Contreras home run earlier this year, where he, I think that was a walk-off, but he definitely took a long, long time getting around. Joey Ortiz had another at-bat with the bases loaded. The man has had 29 plate appearances, 28 at-bats with the bases loaded this year. It has not gone well for him in that category. I think it's only the 5 hits. But man, that is like 20% roughly. It was when I figured it. 20% of bases loaded at-bats involving Milwaukee Brewers this year featured Joey Ortiz. It's probably a little less than that now, but still, that's wild. How does that happen? That's so strange. And then one other note, Bob Uecker's old Harley Davidson motorcycle. If you're into that, if you're into motorcycles or the legacy of Bob Uecker, check out the Harley Davidson Museum. They have his old motorcycle on display. They have another sort of a separate sort of parallel exhibit called This Is Me, where they have kind of personal bikes, and Elvis Presley's is among those that are going to be on display in that museum. So I thought that was kind of a cool thing. Obviously Bob Uecker remains top of mind. We've been talking about him these last several weeks at length, and thought that was kind of a nice touch as well. All right, that'll do it. Let's go back in time. Let's revisit the Brewers past. Here we go. It is my weekly segment, Remember When. Todd, you, I have a feeling, do not remember the 1981 Brewers clinching a playoff spot. Is that correct? Is that fair? Or do you have some memories there?
Fleeting memories. I would have been in, what, fifth grade, I think, at that point. So, I mean, I was following enough that I remember the players and in kind of the moments and everything. But what are you setting me up for? What are you working toward?
Oh, no, I was just curious because I was going to talk about their first clinch, the first clinch in 1981. Never spotlighted that here in this segment because I was going through roadforjsonline.com. The moments that the Brewers clinched have a running collection of the games that led them to be able to celebrate. I'll have to add on Sunday, even though it was a loss. We'll add that detail as well. The first one on that list came in 1981. That's when the Raleigh Fingers strikes out Lou Whitaker, the Detroit Tigers, the second to last day of the season, October 3rd. And that gave the Brewers the victory and a clinch in the American League East. This was a really weird season, really weird. It was divided by a strike, a player strike in the middle of the season. So you had a first half winner and a second half winner. The Yankees won the first half, so they knew they were going to the playoffs, and the Brewers were in first place coming down the stretch in the second half. This, of course, is the team before the one that goes to the World Series in 1982. It was pretty meaningful stuff. This would have been the first time in franchise history. Fingers, of course, had come over to the Brewers prior to the 1981 season. He was this big trade acquisition. Pete Vukovich was part of that as well. Both of those guys had huge roles in this game where they ended up winning a 2-1 game over Detroit. Brought them into that series against the Yankees. Of course, Bob Uecker's famous call on that. You can find that clip online. Swing and a miss. Goodbye, Detroit. Hello, New York. Brewers end up losing that series to New York in five games. We've talked about that one before. That was a heartbreaker. Division series before there were actual division series was the way this strike format worked. The Brewers had rallied for two runs in the eighth, RBIs by Ted Simmons and Gorman Thomas. That gave them the lead and Fingers. He struck out Champ Summers and Whitaker in the 1-2-3 ninth. Fingers retired all four men that he faced. Of course, closers often went multiple innings back in the day, and Raleigh Fingers got them into the playoffs. It was a crazy finish. They went up a half game on September 30th by beating Boston. Then after an off day, there were three teams that were chasing them that were a game back: Baltimore, the Yankees, and Detroit. The Yankees did not matter. They knew they were going to the playoffs, so the Brewers needed to finish ahead of Baltimore and Detroit. The Tigers lost in extras on the Brewers' off day, October 1st, lost in Baltimore on a sacrifice fly by Gary Renicky, the brother of future Brewers manager Ron Renicky. That was for the Orioles. So that brought the Orioles within a game. So the Orioles and Tigers are both within a game going into this penultimate day. But then the Brewers, they beat the Tigers 8-2. Orioles had lost to the Yankees. So that put the Brewers one game above the Yankees and two ahead of Baltimore and Detroit. So they just needed one more win that would have clinched it with two games to go. The Orioles did win on October 3rd, but the Brewers beat the Tigers, as we mentioned. Pete Vukovich was big. He got the starting pitching performance that day. Jamie Easterly had an inning, followed by Fingers. Only 28,000 people saw it. Only 28,000 people were at County Stadium that day to see the Brewers clinch their first playoff spot. Got to remember, though, that was a strike season, so fans were maybe staying away from the ballpark a little more than they would have normally. 53-degree day, so it was a nice September fall day for the first clinch. You've got to see the video. If you've not seen the video of Raleigh Fingers striking out Whitaker, the energy, the celebration afterwards, the fans, you've got to see that. It is a very cool clip. One of my favorites and a great, great call by Bob Uecker. All right, that's it. That's our trip down memory lane. Now we close it down the way that we always do. And that is with Todd's Take of the Week. Bring it home, Todd.
I don't have much for you, JR. I think I kind of laid it all out for you earlier in this podcast. I got a little not heated, but a little demonstrative, let's say. I'll just go back to what I said earlier about enjoy this run that the Brewers are on. I feel sometimes like fans are a little bit entitled and they get a little bit almost like this is expected. This is rare, folks. This is not something that typically happens in baseball anyway, when you're not a large market team. And again, for what the Brewers are doing, what the Brewers have done, pretty incredible. And I was kind of joking around with my better half last night. I've been covering the Brewers since 2011, and how many postseason appearances is that for me now that I will have covered? Eight, I think, in 15 years. Then you have Haudricourt, yep, who covered, what, 3-4 in 35 or something like that, you know, tough four scenes. Five, whatever it may be. I mean, it's definitely less than me. So it just kind of gives you an idea of the length of futility, the amount of futility that there was between 82 and 2008, and then 2008 and really 2018. You had the playoff appearance in there in 2011. Obviously, got very close to the World Series. But bottom line is this should be a fun time for everybody. You know, don't worry about payrolls. Don't worry about this, that, or the other. Don't worry about who's getting traded in the offseason. Just live in the moment and appreciate the fact that the Brewers have the best record in baseball. It still sounds amazing to say it. And enjoy the last week of the season. Enjoy the bye as the Brewers line their team up the best that they can. And then whoever winds up coming to Milwaukee for the start of the NLDS, it'll be a great series. So a lot to look forward to. A lot of cool stuff coming up, and I'm sure you'll be following right along with us at JS Online.
That's great. Wise words, Todd. To stand up for the fan, I understand that when you get used to, 7 out of 8 years going to the playoffs, you kind of want to experience something else. Brewers fans of this age have never been to a World Series. They've seldom seen playoff success. I get it. It's a big deal whether or not they win in the postseason. They know that. They know that too. But it is wild for people who grew up watching 90s and early 2000s Brewers baseball that when you're just happy to be in the race in August to go from that to, they're gonna win more games than they did the year before for the third consecutive year. And this time they might actually win the most games in franchise history. It's a pretty cool time, pretty special stuff. All right, I'm going to move now into my interview with Jackson Churio. We were joined by Daniel de Mondesert, who is the translator for the Brewers. He's a coach as well. And I did edit this, so you will hear Daniel translate to Jackson Churio on the first question. After that, I leave that out. So you will hear Jackson's responses and then Daniel's translations of Jackson's responses, followed by my questions. It was a tough microphone environment. I have two microphones and three people. I tried to make that work, but I'm a little far away and echoey, but you can hear me. It'll be fine. You'll hear me. And you'll hear them, of course, which is the most important part. So that's coming up right now. Thank you for joining me, Todd. I hope you enjoy what's ahead. One more week of baseball and then the postseason. Appreciate it. We'll be chatting again very soon.
Always a pleasure, JR.
Indeed. Here's my conversation with Jackson Churio. Enjoy that last week. They're not going to know who they're going to play by the end of it because they will not have the luxury of knowing what happens in those wild card series. We'll find that out the week after that. We will be back with you again on Monday morning next week. Talk to you again soon, guys. Bye-bye.
My guest is Jackson Churio. Of course, you know him well. Outfielder for the Milwaukee Brewers. And Jackson, when I do these interviews, I always go back to the beginning. I'd like to know a little about Venezuela, what the baseball community was like where you were growing up, what you remember about baseball and how you kind of came to the game in the first place.
Haciendo esta entrevista, a él le gusta empezar del principio, entonces él quiere saber cómo tuve Venezuela cuando tú estabas creciendo, la pelota en Venezuela, en tu comunidad, y lo que tú recuerdas de jugando pelota en Venezuela.
No, la verdad es que son unos recuerdos muy bonitos, muy especiales, ya que ese comienzo uno siempre lo recuerda, ¿sabes? Como algo muy especial y nada, lo disfruté, la verdad que tuve una gran experiencia, por así decirlo, allá. Y nada, me siento muy contento de todos los amigos que hice y las personas.
Yeah, it's very special. I think whenever you look back at the memories that you have from growing up playing, baseball back home, they're very beautiful memories. So it's a lot of fun. It brings back a lot of those good feelings to think about, and just very happy. I was able to make a ton of lifelong friends playing back home in Venezuela, and just in general, just a ton of good memories thinking back on it.
Was it your dream to play big league baseball right away, like as long as you can remember, or were there other sports? Like, when did your love for baseball lead you to wanting to be in the major leagues?
No, la verdad que yo creo que siempre ha sido béisbol, ¿sabes? Creo que llegué a jugar básquetbol y todas esas cosas así, pero no sentía como que ese amor y esa pasión como la que siento cuando juego béisbol.
It's always been baseball for me. It's, when I was younger, I played, would play, basketball and soccer and some other things, but it wasn't the same. You don't feel the same, passion and love for it. So, yeah, from day one for me, it was always baseball.
When the Brewers signed you, they brought you over here. You're very young when you start playing for Carolina. I'm sure you've talked about this before, but the toughest What were some of the toughest aspects of coming stateside? I'm sure the baseball is a big part of it, but learning the language, all of that. Like, what was the toughest part about that transition?
No, la verdad que yo creo que una de las cosas más difíciles es acostumbrarse a no estar con su familia, ¿sabes? En Venezuela siempre los tenía ahí cerca y ya cuando me fui a otro país fue un poquito complicado esa parte. Pero igual yo siempre sentí su apoyo y nada, siempre me hacía, ellos hacían sentido de alguna manera. Yo creo que es una de las partes más complicadas para mí.
I think the hardest part for me is just the separation of the family. You know, back home in Venezuela, I always had my family nearby and you know, once you get to a different country, you know, you start to feel, you know, the distance that really is between you and your family. And you know, I always feel their support and I always feel their love. And you know, to this day, you know, one way or another, I always feel them, you know, supporting me and having my back. But yeah, it's a little complicated, you know, for the first time being away from them and not getting to be, you know, close to your family.
How often are you able to talk to your family?
Al principio, creo que más que ahorita, más que ahora.
I think at the beginning a little bit more than what I do now.
Obviously, your hitting was very good in the minors. Your defense, you know, you got a minor league gold glove, and I know there was a switch to outfield pretty early, but how often did you work on your outfield defense? When did that become an emphasis for you?
Yo creo que... Una pregunta. Yo creo que cuando ya empecé a jugar como profesionalmente fue que yo empecé a jugar a field, ¿sabes? Nunca en mi vida yo había cambiado como que del infield. Siempre había sido infield, solo que nunca había practicado en el outfield, por así decirlo. Entonces cuando mi primer año fue que me dijeron, no, vas a jugar center field, y yo como que, está bien, vamos a darle, ¿me entiendes?
Yeah, no, really, I think it was my first year, you know, professionally playing is kind of when I started doing it. My whole life growing up, I had always been an infielder and never really done anything else. And so, you know, it was kind of once I got to the academy in the Dominican, they told me I was going to play center field. And, you know, I said great and kind of went out there. And that was really kind of the beginning of working in the outfield.
How long of a process was it when they approached you with an extension? Was that stressful for you, or did that go very quickly?
No, la verdad que no le podría decir qué tan largo fue o qué tan corto porque no tengo la menor idea de eso. Solo sé que me contentó mucho cuando me comentaron eso y la verdad que me siento muy afortunado.
No, I can't really speak to how long or short of a process it was, because the reality is I really have no idea. All I know is I was just obviously very happy whenever I was approached with the opportunity to do it, and just felt very blessed.
Take me through we're almost to the playoffs again. Take me through your home runs last year, what you really remember. I mean, I know it ended poorly, but the moments when you had those two home runs, maybe Sal and Jake as well, like what sticks out to you?
No, la verdad que yo creo que es uno de los recuerdos cuadrados para toda mi vida. Ese sentimiento, esa emoción que sentí cuando conecté el primer home run y el segundo, la verdad que no tiene precio. Una de las mejores emociones que he sentido en mi vida y espero volver a sentirla.
No, I think those homers that I hit there was one of the best feelings that I have in my life. You know, I think being able to connect for the first one and, you know, watch that one go and the second one the same, they're just memories that I'll remember hands down for the rest of my life. And hope to repeat several more times.
I should have asked this with your defense, but this catch, you saved a home run against Minnesota earlier in the year. It feels like a turning point. You know, everything kind of came together after that. Does that feel like a turning point to you? In the moment, did it feel like something that could lift you guys up from where you were?
Sí, no, la verdad que tanto en lo personal, yo siento que cada juego es importante, ¿sabes? Como le digo siempre trato de dar lo mejor de mí en cada juego y nada, trato de disfrutarlo lo más que pueda, ¿no? Yo creo que se podría decir que fue un buen momento para romperle la racha a ellos y empezar la de nosotros, claro.
Yeah, I think the way that I always put it is every game is very important to go out there and win. So like I always say, you know, I'm going out there to give the best version of myself that I possibly can and contribute whatever I can to help the team win. But yeah, I think, you know, whenever you look back on that moment, it definitely was good in the time being, maybe kind of putting their streak to an end and starting our own. But yeah, I definitely, the way I'm always approaching it is each play, each chance you have to impact a game, I'm trying to do so.
the injury you had, were you worried? I mean, were you worried that it was worse? And you know, you were back pretty quickly, but was that a difficult process for you? You hadn't had something like that before.
No, la verdad que lo único que pensaba era mejorarme lo mejor posible, ¿sabes? Sabía que no iba a ser tan fácil porque nunca en mi vida había pasado por algo así. Y como era algo nuevo, yo solamente quería estar lo mejor posible para cuando volviera no pasarme nada. No volverme a lesionar de lo mismo, pues, ¿me entiendes? Solamente estar lo más sano posible y ayudar al equipo.
Yeah, definitely going through it, you know, the thing that was on my mind, you know, first and foremost was just coming back and rehabbing just the best that I possibly could. You know, ensuring that whenever I did come back, I was at full strength and I was doing everything I possibly could to help the team win. You know, being that it was the first time that I had gone through something like that, the last thing I wanted to do is to come back and have something happen or re-aggravate the injury. So the focus the whole time was just really on treating it and getting back to 100%.
All right, last question. What do you do when you're not playing baseball? Have you had a chance to check out Milwaukee and get a sense of the city? Like, what are some of the things that you're into when you're actually away from the baseball field?
No, yo creo que no he tenido la oportunidad de conocer Milwaukee, la verdad. Me gustaría, pero no sé, no he tenido la oportunidad. Pero ahorita lo que hago es he ido mucho al cine. voy al cine y juego bastante videojuegos.
No, you know, honestly, I haven't had a great opportunity to kind of enjoy the city of Milwaukee as much as I would like to. You know, I certainly would like to. I just, haven't had the chance to do so quite yet. But no, right now in my free times, I go to the movies quite a bit, and I like to play my fair share of video games as well. So that's kind of how I pass my time.
Okay, Jackson Churio, thank you so much, sir.
Hey, it's Austin James. Yes, I'm living with diabetes, but it doesn't have to define me. Thanks to the FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor, I get real-time glucose readings throughout the day. The FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor is small and easy to wear, giving me the freedom to focus on my life as a parent and a musician. Now this is progress. You can get a free sensor at freestylelibre.us.
Offer available for people who qualify. Visit myfreestyle.us to see all terms and conditions. Certain exclusions apply. Data on file, Abbott Diabetes Care. For prescription only. Safety info found at freestylelibre.us.
If you've been thinking about getting serious with your money, like actually serious, now's the time. The Motley Fool is offering new members 50% off their iconic stock recommendation service, Stock Advisor. This is the same service that's crushed the market with recommendations that have returned 1,057% since inception, compared to the S&P 500's 180% over that same period. This isn't guesswork. The Motley Fool has a track record of finding companies before they become household names. So if you want to invest smarter and you like saving money while doing it, go to fool.com/listen to claim your 50% off discount off a one-year term of Stock Advisor. Again, that's fool.com/listen. Returns of 1,057% are from the Motley Fool's product Stock Advisor and measured against S&P 500 returns of 180% as of July 10th, 2025. Past performance is not an indicator of future results. All investing involves a risk of loss. Individual investment results may vary.